Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the show, Alternative Medicine and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. So today, we're going to be talking about a vegetarian cookbook. Yes, I know that word that sounds like, oh my gosh, you mean I'm not going to eat meat anymore, and oh, I really don't want to change my diet. I even spoke to a relative, and she was saying, oh my gosh, I have to do an elimination diet. And I said, you know, why don't you just change it and say, instead of doing elimination, which entitles that you can't have something you want, why don't you just find a diet that has all of the things and the food groups that you normally like to eat and call it that one? And then you'll feel so much better doing something positive. Hey, it's all about the way we think about it in our minds, because really our minds are all in control. You know, so let's just change the way we rephrase things and maybe we can come out on the other side. Today my guest is Deborah Madison, and she is the author of 11 cookbooks and is well known for her simple seasonal vegetable-based cooking. And I really think that that's very important, because what we're going to be talking about is just not totally always being vegetarian or vegan. If that's what you want, that's fabulous. There are answers in this book. But also about how to institute vegetables and fruits into your diet and how important that is. It's not about opening up a can, draining out the water, dumping it on your dish, blopping all this butter and salt back on it, and then that's what you're eating. There are all different realms of how to eat vegetables and fruits healthy. The book is called The New Vegetarian Cooking for Everyone. And Deborah, thank you so much for joining us today. I think it's a great time to be talking about this in February of, you know, a new year.
Thank you very much for having me.
Don't you think it's just a real challenge these days? You know, we say we can speak about our books all the time and we're speaking to the choir because, hey, everybody gets it and you have this cool recipe. But then you look at the other side and people are saying, well, you know, I dump it out of the can and I put all this stuff on it and I eat two bites and I'm done, right?
I don't know. I guess I'm sort of shocked to hear you say that. I don't think I've eaten vegetables out of a can in ever, maybe.
Yeah.
But one thing I did want to say is about the title, Vegetarian Cooking for Everyone. You know,
right.
I have always viewed this as the vegetable side of the plate. And if a person is a meat eater, that's fine. That's their choice. This book is not to make a vegetarian out of anybody, but it is about all the ways you can have vegetables, and they can stand alone. You can definitely make a vegetarian life out of this book, a vegan menu, but you can also serve vegetables in many, many ways alongside of the meat that you're maybe used to eating. So I just wanted to say that from the get-go.
Yes, and I think that that's very true, because a lot of people say, I'm already ingrained in what I've been eating throughout my life, and how do I change it? But this is a great way of looking at some different recipes and saying, this sounds really interesting, I can do this, or I'd love to try that. And really that's what it's all about, is just to inspire people to make one change, one tiny little thing that's different. Or instead of opening up a can for mushroom soup, hey, use the creamy mushroom soup recipe you have. A little bit different, right?
Yeah. In fact, it's funny you mentioned mushroom soup, because I've been making that a lot lately for a recipe from my book on soups. But there is one in here, too. And it's just so easy to do. And it's so delicious. It's so good. And I'm serving it for a very fancy dinner party on Saturday. I think it's that good, and I make it for my husband to take to his studio to heat up for lunch. So what's not to like about that?
Great. And you know what I find, too, though, is I live here in the Deep South, and a lot of people here will say we eat great. Yeah, they eat great, but what they do is they eat differently. Now, you know, I grew up in the 50s and 60s in the Northeast up by Amish country, so we had everything from the farms. Everything was clean. Everything was great. But then over the decades of my lives, I've lived in different areas. I lived in Arizona, so I ate like they did there. I lived in California. I ate there. And here in New Orleans, you know, I lived here for, it's almost 30 years now, and it is so totally different. You can go to a restaurant and be sitting with someone, and they'll say, I'll have the hamburger and fries and no salad on top. And you and I would think that that means no salad, right? But what it really means is I don't want the tomatoes, the onions, and the pickles and the ketchup on my hamburger. Because yeah, and, you know, that's we have to look at that because, really, you know, there's all kinds of people in this world and all kinds of people like to make different changes. So we're really all about talking about the full range of changes that people can make.
Good.
You know, it's really crazy when you hear people say that no salad and everybody's going, yeah, I know, I know. And, you know, people just don't eat
I never thought of those add-ons as a salad, actually. I think salad is something I could easily make a meal of.
Right. Isn't that something? And, you know, I myself made pea soup the other night, and I put it down, and I just made it very simply, you know, with carrots and onions and celery and dried peas. And I think there was one thing I added in it was a little bit of anise powder, little tiny drop, and it just seemed to blossom the whole soup. And a relative had come home and said, oh, my gosh, what is it that smells so good? And I said what it was. I said, it's pea soup. And they're like, oh, no way, no way. I said, oh, just try it. So they had a bowl, and they had two tiny spoons in the bottom, and they tried it, and they liked it. And then they said, oh, I'll go get a little more, and they put two more spoons in. But really, that's really about how we institute new changes into our diet, I think, is, hey, make it smell good, have it seem inviting, try one or two spoons, and then see where you go from there, right?
Well, that is one way. And, I mean, and herbs and spices are so important. They're important to me, and I use them a lot in my cooking because they give foods these complex, inviting aromas. And once you become familiar with them, you find that they are what can lead a basic food, a vegetable, for example, in many different directions. I know people say they get bored with their cooking, and it's partly because you know, they're doing the same thing over and over. But if you think of, say, corn in the summertime, if you had fresh corn, it would be one thing with dill. It's another thing with cilantro. It's another thing with fresh marjoram. It's, you know, it's another thing with basil. I mean, it's the herbs that really are, and it can go into the spice realm too, of course, that are leading. They're modifying the vegetable and giving you so many possibilities for flavors that you might not have considered.
And there's so many different things out there. You know, when you look at the spice rack in a regular grocery store, you see all these bottles of dried stuff, and I'm sure if you ever put an X on one of them, you can come back a year later and it's still the same bottle there. But anyway, you know, we always want to try to use fresh things. And what I found to institute fresh herbs was I go to some of these different stores, like some of the health-oriented grocery stores, and sometimes you can buy it in bulk, meaning that, you know, there's one Indian spice, and I'm very unfound of, I do not like cumin or coriander or turmeric. I have terrible, I just actually get really sick when I smell it. But this one had it was an Indian one. It was very sweet. And I don't even remember the name, but I said, you know what, I'm going to try this. And what
I
did
was, or the powdered?
Yeah, it was powdered. But what I did is they had it in the, you know, in the little tiny drawers you pull out and you could get buy how much you want it. And it was super expensive. It was like, you know, $20 or $30 for like maybe 2 or 3 ounces. So I took like a teeny drop, I mean a teeny drop, and put it in a the baggies they had and brought it home. And do you know, I'm still using it because I only put a little tiny bit, but that little tiny bit was just enough for me to feel the change of that. And I thought that how great that was. So if you really want to institute something you don't know, just try that little tiny bit, right?
Yeah, and turmeric is a very important, spice. It's a rhizome, and people are encouraged to eat it all the time. I just made a soup this morning with red lentils. It's from Vegetarian Cooking, the new Vegetarian Cooking for Everyone. It's a red lentil soup, and it's very brothy, and you build it up with rice and vegetables and so forth. But it has a lot of turmeric in it. And what makes it work is the addition of lime. It's the acid. When you add that lime, suddenly everything softens, and it changes. It's turmeric is a very, you don't usually use it in quantity because it's a very acrid and very strong spice, but it's also a very beneficial one to eat. So knowing little things like adding the lime, smooths it out, smooths out that flavor, and lets it blend in with everything else.
Well, I lived in Arizona, and we were all about the health community there when I was going to medical school, and that's when we had a lot of it. It was just like, I just can't do this. I would even walk into a restaurant that was using it, and I would be throwing up in the parking lot. So I just said, no way, Jose, I'm out of here. But anyway, you find out you have these rooted allergies. But hey, what I did is I just made the same foods that they had there, and I just left that out and tried something else. So that's the great part about your cookbook is that if you don't like a certain spice or something, you can leave it out. Doesn't mean you throw away the whole recipe. You're just leaving out a little tiny piece that might not work for you.
Right. And I usually, because I tend to think this way, give a lot of other suggestions, and variations. If this doesn't work, try this, or these are spices you can use instead of that, whatever it is. We have lots and lots of options. Sometimes I think the flavor of a particular herb or spice is important. It may be what defines a dish. And if it's not one that you like, make another one. Make another dish. There's like 1,500 recipes in this book, so there's no lack of possibilities. If you don't like cilantro, don't make the cilantro salsa. Make a parsley caper sauce instead, or a pesto, or a tremula, or, another salsa altogether.
And also in your book, what I thought was very important is that at the beginning of each section, you have about doing basic things like basic lentils. And then you can add what you want or what you might be drawn to from there. So it's really important because a lot of people don't even know what lentils are and how do they use them. Even when you say chickpeas on the stove, they don't know how to cook that. They don't know what that might mean. So it's like growing cooks, don't you think?
It is, and it is, and I mean, this is a new edition of this book, but it came out in 1997, and it's probably been the most popular book that I've written, and I have met so many people who've said, this book taught me how to cook, or because my picture used to be on the spine, I have a lot of young friends who grew up, and it was at their height at a certain age, and they said, oh, you're the lady, as a kid, I grew up on that food, and now I cook from this book, and I really did have in mind teaching people about things, and so, there's a lot of information about ingredients themselves and how they behave and what to expect from them. Like, does something absorb a lot of water or just a little? You need to know that. Once you know that, then you're free to go ahead and be very experimental. But in the beginning, you're not. There are techniques that we need to learn and we need to talk about. There's so many different ingredients on the market today that we didn't have when you and I were growing up. Vinegars, for example. I mean, there's apple cider champagne and fruit vinegars and red wine and sherry vinegar and aged sherry vinegar and rice wine and plum and so on and so forth. So does it really make sense, for example, to talk about a salad dressing recipe as always being 3-to-1, 3 parts oils
right.
and 1 part vinegar? Not at all, because they have different levels of acidity. So I want to introduce people to that idea that you have to taste. Once
yeah.
you start to taste, then you can go all kinds of places. But in the beginning, it's useful to know that sherry vinegar is highly acidic, and it's much more acidic than, say, rice wine vinegar. So that's going to change the nature of your salad dressing. But in the end, when you dip that lettuce leaf in there and you taste it and decide for yourself.
You know, I had gone to one of these big box stores one day, and there was a mailman, and he was picking out, going through the big bin of iceberg lettuce, looking for a good head of iceberg lettuce. And, you know, I can't remember if I've even eaten iceberg lettuce. But, and I said to him, I said, why don't you get this other container? It was organic heads of it, and it was in a container, and it had 2 purples and 2 dark greens. And I said to him, I said, did you ever try this? He said, you mean on a sandwich? I said, yes, lettuce, it's a great a thing. And, he kind of looked at it, and he says, well, what does it taste like? And I'm going, gosh, sometimes I don't even notice if lettuce even has a taste, I mean, sometimes it tastes a slight bit peppery if it's arugula, or sometimes it might taste just a little bit cool to the, taste when you're eating it. Otherwise, I kind of probably never noticed. And I wanted to ask him back, well, what does your iceberg taste like? But I never did. I just kind of let it go. And he's like, no, I'll take my iceberg and I'll go on.
Yeah.
And it was like,
well, people
okay.
like iceberg because it's crisp. It doesn't have much flavor, if any flavor. It's actually derived from a beautiful old heirloom lettuce called Rund Glas, or Queen of Ice, which is a much better lettuce. But lettuces are subtle, and they do
right.
have flavors. When you get into arugula, which can be really spicy and lively, you're in a whole
mm-hmm.
other family. So, yes, you have to consider that, too, although we treat it like lettuce. In fact, it can be very hot and very spicy, and it might be something you want a little bit more of a condiment instead of the whole thing, unless you're really drawn to those flavors. But, yeah, I mean, I think doing things having tastings, can be
right.
really valuable. If you always eat butternut squash and you don't try any other kind, you don't know what the differences are. You sometimes have to sit down and taste things side by side to really see and learn and know, what separates an acorn squash in terms of flavor from a delicata, from a pumpkin, from a this, from a that. Admittedly, this is hard to do at home because you're not going to probably want to buy all these squashes and cook them, but
mm-hmm.
it's something a group of friends could do, and
right.
you could sit down or lettuces, you could taste them side by side. By the way, New Orleans has great farmers markets. Crescent City Farmers Market, I did a book on farmers markets, and I spent quite a bit of time there, and that's where I would love to encourage people to go for truly fresh food and for foods that are interesting and for herbs and a variety of lettuces and great tomatoes, and, that's food that really is alive.
Yes, you really do need food that's alive and food that hasn't been sitting around for a while, What I think is vitally important also in your book is that you also, like in the chapter on cauliflower, you say what to look for. What should it look like? How do you store it? Because
mm-hmm.
a lot of people, I looked down, I have a picture. I was at the store about maybe 2 months ago. And this particular store had a bag of Brussels sprouts, which I love. And it was like, oh, gosh, they're in a bag, which was already a hesitation. And then the bag was really wet, and it kind of drew me to it. And I looked at it, and my son said, my gosh, you're not buying those things, are you? And I'm like, why? He says, look at them. and we looked at them, and they all had black spots all over them because they were already, you know, all moldy and stuff in the water. So it's really great to be able to know how and what things should look like. You don't want to be buying food. You want to buy it as fresh as you can. You don't want to be buying it on the decay decline. And
It's already a little bit decay on the decline if you're at a big box store anyway. You know, if you're not picking it from your garden or going to the farmer's market, who knows how long it's been. You know, it can be, these things can last for weeks, and fresh is where the nutrition is. But yeah, I do try to try always in New Vegetarian Cooking for Everyone to lead people to how to store things. What does water do? Water is very harmful when you go to store, say, lettuce. That's where the bacteria forms. That's where you get, you know, rotting and disintegration. Things need to be dry. And despite, you know, you go to a store and everything's sprayed with water to kind of keep it fresh looking or like fresh. I suppose that's necessary to some degree, but when you get it home and you're not planning to cook it right away, you really need to dry it well. Otherwise, you risk spoilage.
Yeah, and, you know, when they keep them in, and when you bring things home and they're in those plastic bags that you got from the grocery store and it's already wet and everything and you just shove it in your vegetable drawer, that's really a setup for not so good. Well, let's talk about some of the great things about vegetables, because I think there's some fabulous things. I mean, that's pretty much the basis of my intake right now. My nutritional intake is almost all vegetables. Mm-hmm. And I think that this book is really great. It has so many different kinds and so many different ways you're able to cook things. I mean, something as simple as cranberry, orange, and tangerine relish. I mean, my goodness, right now that's a perfect season to be able to make that, because we have cranberries in the bags, you know, we've got tangerines on the shelf, and you might even just, you know, be able to grab an orange and some sugar and you're good to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just made that for Thanksgiving. Well, I guess that's not just, it's a few months ago, but it seems pretty recent. And that's a condiment. You know, it's not really a vegetable dish. It's something that perks up things that could be a little stodgy or, you know, I mean, there's a reason it's traditional at Thanksgiving and Christmas, is because, you know, it really helps the turkey come alive to have this little bit of, you know, compote that's sweet and tangy and, you know, and a little bit sour from the cranberries. It's good with meats, but it's also good with other vegetables.
So let's talk about cucumbers. You'd say about seasonal in your book also, because cucumbers, everybody's demanding like they have them 12 months out of the year. You know how that is. But I am something, I don't know what it is about me, but I can pick up a cucumber and smell it and say, that doesn't smell right, and I'll put it back. So I'm a weird
person.
Yeah, I'll go through all of the vegetables in the store, and if it doesn't have or smell like that, which is familiar to me, it goes back on the shelf. And I'll be telling the people next to me, don't pick that up, that doesn't smell right. Or, you know, or we always do this, you know, when peaches and stuff are out and they're not supposed to be. And people behind you will pick it up and I'll say, oh, my gosh, that thing will never get ripe. And they're like, oh, I just put it on the counter. I says, no, you're putting it on the counter so it can decay. You're not putting it there because it's ripe. And they're like, I don't quite get that, you know.
Yeah, I know. But the whole thing with fruit is, that's a whole other topic. It's a disaster.
And
people don't smell things anymore.
Right.
You know, I watch people shop, and when they go to buy fruit in the summer and the store is filled with all these stone fruits and things, and, of course, everyone's saying, oh, you have to eat so many servings a day. I notice people don't bring them to their nose. They just put them in the bag, throw the bag in the, you know, into their big basket and bruise them then. But there is no smell for the most part, you know.
Right.
It's been, you know, something that's picked green. Smell is a function of ripeness and promise, and if there's no smell, there's nothing you're going to enjoy eating. If the smell is indicated of fermentation or rot or spoilage, that warns you away from it. And if your cucumber doesn't smell right to you, I don't know what you mean by that, because there's lots of kinds of cucumbers. But maybe it's a little old. Maybe it's off. Maybe you're smelling wax.
Yes.
Smell is very, very important, and it's something we don't pay nearly enough attention to.
But sometimes, you know, you can cut a cucumber and it'll have that distinct green crisp, like I call it green crisp linen. That's how it smells to me. It just smells like, it's just like, it's something you can't imagine if you've never smelled it, but once you have, you'll never forget it.
Yeah.
And
that's why we eat them. That's why they should be a summer vegetable, because, or vegetable fruit, because that's when they do have that odor. They're not going to have, cold takes away odors, and it kind of dumbs everything down. You know, cucumbers should be picked, chilled, and then eaten, and that's it. I think a vegetable that has a little more nutrition than a cucumber, but it's in the same botanical family as winter squash. And that's certainly something we should be eating now or thinking about eating. If we're not, it's so easy to prepare, and there's so many things you can do with it.
Right, and that's a perfect example of let's not pick up the cucumbers in December and January, maybe pick up the squash. Because, you know, you don't always have to be stuck into one paradigm of, you know, these are the 10 things that I eat and that's it. And, you know, definitely rotate your food according to the season.
Well, yeah, that just makes sense. That's when, you know, when foods are eaten in their season, it's when they taste best and they're most rewarding.
Yeah.
Like February is sort of coming to the end of your winter squash, which they matured in the fall and then they were cured and stored. So by February, if you've been eating seasonally, you've probably had a lot of winter squash, and you're kind of ready to go on to something else, like where, you know, the first signs of spring, the green things. And you may notice when you pick up a squash that you bought that you thought was really heavy, it suddenly is starting to become lighter because it's the water is evaporating from it. So, you know, come February, end of February, we're starting to say goodbye to winter squash. But during the winter, they're a great food. They're economical. They're delicious. Kids like them because they tend to be sweet. They're naturally sweet on their own. And there are lots of squashes to choose from. We see relatively few in markets. We might see more varieties at farmers markets. But even in your regular store, grocery store, you're going to see delicatas, you're going to see butternut, you're going to see acorn, which to me is not the most interesting squash. There's a reason people always add sugar. You're going to see buttercup squashes, those little squat ones, you know, like Perfection and Honey Delight.
Right.
Things aren't always named, you know, which is not a help, you know, for the shopper to know what to do, but the squashes for some reason do seem to have names attached to them, either in a sticker or on the side of a bin, and then it's very helpful. You can go to a book and you can say, oh, I think it's a spaghetti squash, or I have a Hubbard, or, you know, what can I do with it? And then, you know, I try to answer those questions.
Well, you know what I've also done, too, is sometimes when I buy things like rices, different types, or quinoas or something, and it's a little bit out of the ordinary that I might not recognize it and I'm buying it in bulk, I will take a picture of it with my cell phone. Usually they'll have an identifier, and then they'll say what it is, you know, what its product number is. But then underneath, they might, in some stores, they'll say this is a ratio of 4:1 or this is a ratio of 2:1 or whatever, or this has to be washed first or whatever. So if you take a picture of just that sticker off of there, you know what you've bought in that day, and at least it can give you a little bit more direction.
Yes, because they're pretty limited. Their space is pretty limited. Well, how do you cook quinoa? They might say 2:1, but what's your elevation? Are you boiling it the whole time? Are you simmering it? What are you looking for? That's the key. It's not just the amounts or just the times, but, you know, a recipe or a cookbook writer has to tell you what you're looking for when you say cook quinoa. You're looking to see that little germ, you know, appear around the rim. And that could take 15 minutes. It probably does. If it does, and you still have a lot of water in your pot, you can drain it, but don't throw it away. It's delicious. You can use that, you know, in a soup or in something else you're making. There won't be a lot. 2-to-1 is a pretty good suggestion for a ratio of water to grain when you're talking about quinoa. You know, but this is what a cookbook should do, is to try to help someone go around, you know, negotiate all these little options. It's very hard to write for every single condition that everyone has. You're at sea level. I'm at 7,000 feet. It's a big difference.
Right.
You know, water doesn't boil at 212. Boils at 194 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have to allow for all of that and then give people an idea of here's what you can expect to see when you do this or when you do that.
And even in your book, you also have a recipe for pizza dough. And some people would say, oh, goodness, there's no way I can eat like that. I'm going to miss all of my favorite foods. And really what this is about is learning how to just put some different ingredients on that pizza and maybe make your own dough, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and the dough is actually pretty easy to make, although I have to realize I'm saying that and I'm used to making it. You can buy dough also if you're nervous about that, but you don't have to buy a pre-baked, you know, bubbly pizza crust made everything with white flour and so forth. You know, you could.
Right.
I encourage people to try it because once you do it, you know, maybe the first time is awkward. You know, you weren't quite sure what you were watching for. The second time, it's a little easier. Third time, you can practically do it with your eyes shut. And it doesn't take long. I mean, this is really fast, you know, to put together. And then, you know, you have all kinds of possible toppings, none of which have to be greasy and, you know, just unhealthful. So, you know, they can be mushrooms, they can be cheeses, it can be eggplant with dried oregano in the summer, or eggplant with tomato, sautéed artichoke hearts. I know you have artichokes down there in your farmer's market.
Right.
Roasted red peppers in the summer, zucchini. Hey, you can mess around with pizza in lots and lots and lots of different ways. Many people have written about pizza.
And also, too, I found I liked about the book, too, in the beginning of it, you had a section, it was definitely about, in the beginning, you said about making sauces and condiments and butters. A lot of people will say, I'm not really ready to jump into anything, and I think this is great to have in the beginning of the book, because you could say, ooh, I can make that, that seems simple. And then that kind of propels you further into the book, you know? If you had something really hard in the beginning of the book, you're like, oh, gosh, no way. But this was fabulous to have
a lot
start.
Of these little sauces and things are easy.
Right.
I'm just looking at them now as we speak, and they don't have a lot of ingredients to them. You know, people, like a Romesco sauce, for example, which you can do completely in your food processor. It happens to be a vegan thing. It's based on nuts like almonds or hazelnuts. It has roasted red peppers in it, sherry vinegar, olive oil. But you make this, doesn't take that long to make, and that is the most delicious condiment, especially in the summer, to serve with any kind of grilled vegetables. Or in the winter, maybe you're making a little appetizer and you slice some bread, you toast it, you put some of this deep red Romesco sauce on it, a little chopped parsley, maybe some green olives or something. Believe me, it's a really delicious little snack that you can make, and it's just got all kinds of good things in it, lots of lipocaine.
And, you know, I looked also because I was getting ready to make chili this evening, and you also have in your book, it says chilled soups for hot days, you know, but then you've also got them for cold days, which is really important because you can still have a soup in the summer and you can still have a soup in the winter, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, soups can be all year around. And although I'm always amazed at how many people on their blogs will say, oh, now that it's cold, it's time for soup.
Right, I know.
I actually make soup all year round because it's a very beneficial food to eat, especially if you're trying to lose weight. And, you know, you can use so many vegetables in it. It goes together so easily. It often gets better, you know, as it sits with time in the refrigerator. Soup is a great food. I even wrote a whole book on soups and brothy soups too, which are they're not hard to make, but most vegetarian cookbooks have not leaned towards trying to figure out how to make a broth, something that's really light but nurturing and beneficial and delicious, because, you know, it's not chicken. It's something
right.
else. So it takes a little thought about how to do that. But if that's your world, it becomes easy. Everything
and
does
also
with
too, what we were saying in the beginning of the hour was about, you know, you don't have to be a total vegetarian. You may be able to pick up this cookbook and say, I'm going to make like a barley soup or a vegetable soup, and I'm going to put in it, you know, a little bit of beef because that's what my husband needs, or my kids mm-hmm. would really love to have some chicken in it. So you just make the basic soup and you'll be able to add whatever you need for your family.
Yeah, or something like that Romesco sauce, which I'm going to make today, and we have it. We just always have a jar of it. I mean, it's excellent with all kinds of vegetables, but you know what? It would be delicious on grilled fish. It would be delicious on chicken. You know, it could go with all kinds of meats too. You're certainly not limited in its use. It would be fabulous with lamb, with a little lamb chop or something like that. In fact, I've often said in all of my books that I've written, you know, if you eat meat, try this with lamb, or this would be delicious right. with fish, or this is a traditional sauce that's served with beef, but here I've done this, you know. So it just, mm-hmm. you know, it opens up the possibilities instead of closing them down.
But also, I think it also allows other people to eat in the same family at the same time, where you're not feeling, if you're a parent, that you've got to do a takeout menu. You've got everybody gives in their orders, and you've got to make four or five different meals. I don't know about
so
you.
Really sorry for parents who are in that position. I don't think I could
right.
do it. I think I would say, hey, if you don't want to eat this, here, I'm going to buy you this book, and I want you to learn to make your own food, make it right alongside with me, you know, not do this in a punishing way, but it's very hard on parents because parents are very busy, and if the fact that they're even making dinner is cause for celebration.
Well, you know, I had four kids, so it was like that. But they weren't, you know, they always did eat everything that was made. But things like an example of a tortilla soup, if you made that and your kids were like, no, you know, I want chicken, and it's okay, fine. Your chicken's over there in the pot, and you're going to put it in your tortilla soup, you know. So
mm-hmm.
in other words, you could have that vegetarian part, but then you could have some sort of meat if somebody wanted, and they would add that to their soup. Same
yeah.
thing with a salad, you know. You can make a great salad, and then if somebody wanted meat or potatoes, you know, you could broil potatoes and put it on the salad, or meat and put it on the salad, whatever that might be. So it's actually a way of incorporating both types of people eating at the same table at once.
Yeah, that's true. And some dishes lend themselves very well to that. I mean, I started doing vegetarian cooking in the 70s when there were no vegetarian cookbooks, pretty
mm-hmm.
much. And I learned by studying classic French cooking, and this was based a lot on meat. But but I could always see the elements that were important for flavor and pull them out to make something else. So a lot of these dishes, in fact, you know, can easily go back to incorporating meat. Or if there is somebody at the table who does eat meat and a dish doesn't work, like lasagna. If you've gone to the trouble to put together a lasagna,
mm-hmm.
you can't just open it up and slide in some bolognese sauce or something. But
right.
the person in the family who wants to have meat can have you have something that's distinct and one single unit, and they can have that on the side.
Yeah, and that's what I've done before is I've made, I don't know if you've ever seen, you probably have those Temptations bowls that go into the oven.
No, I haven't. These,
they are, what do you call it? It's a certain kind of ovenware. Anyway, it's great because, you know, they're small squares and a little bit less than an 8x8. It's the next one down. But anyway, if you're making lasagna, you can make one on one side with meat and one on one side without, which
I've
done before. And it's all the same components, and it's all going into the same oven at the same time, and it's all coming out when you're finished. So it really worked out really well.
Well, great. Yeah. So somebody's figured out how to accommodate different tastes.
Yeah. And I think that's important about accommodating other people, because this is something that it may sound absolutely wonderful to one person. It may sound very foreign to another. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I know here in the South, you know, some people would go to someone's house, like, well, let's use me. I go to some people's house, and they've got all this food there, and I'm like, there is no way in this world I'm eating that stuff. Not going to happen, you know, because it might be all deep fried. It might be all white stuff, you know. You know, white beans, white rice, white flour, that kind of idea. And everything is fried, right down to these balls of vegetables. They said, "Oh, there's vegetables right there on the table. I made them for you," you know. and it might be this frozen broccoli that they put with cheese and bacon, and then they double dipped it in some kind of other stuff, and then they deep fried it. And I'm going, "No way, Jose, not going to happen."
Well, you might want to just take a little bite and say thank you.
Yeah,
situations.
Right, but that's the perfect example is then when they come to your house, you know, you can just say, "Oh my gosh, you know, I saw that you did those. This is how I made them," but still make their food too, you know, so they'll have something to eat. But then they get to try your food. So it's making it just slightly different. You know, I might not, I might use broccoli and cheese, and I might roll it up in a ball or whatever, and then I might just bake it just like that. You know, in like little tartlet cups or something, so it wouldn't look like it was deep fried. And they might try that and say, "Oh, that tastes better because I didn't have to deep fry it." So it's really all about steps in our life, I think, about how we can incorporate healthier choices and making them easy so that, you know, then you can go further and further. And this book is a great asset for that because you can say, "I'll take one or two things that I might know, and I might incorporate it with something I have no clue what that is," and then, you know, it becomes your favorite recipe and you move forward, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you use something in a recipe and you begin to, and you find you like it, then you might take that vegetable that you hated until that moment, like eggplant.
Yeah.
People will say, "Oh, I don't know about eggplant." Eggplant's a very scary vegetable for a lot of people, you know, but maybe they taste it in a restaurant or you've offered it to them and suddenly it's like, "Wow, that's not so bad. Maybe I'll try that." So what do you need to know about eggplant? Well, again, you need to know what to look for when you buy it, how to keep it or not, why you salt it or when you don't have to, all these little things that you want to know up front before you get started. And I think they can go a long way towards introducing people to vegetables that they may not have tried. I don't know if this happens to you, but I know when I'm at the market and I'm picking up something that is maybe unfamiliar to someone, like an eggplant or a celery root or fennel, I get tapped on the shoulder so often. "What is that? What are you going to do with it?" I've always wanted to know. You know, I've walked past this so many times, and I understand the feeling of reluctance to try something that you're unfamiliar with. I think that's a very kind of healthy, protective human quality that we have, you know, that says, "I don't know what it is, and I'm protecting myself. I'm not going to take a chance." But, in fact, you know, many of these things have been tested for a long, long time by humans. So, you know, if somebody can say, "Oh, well, here's what you do with it," or "This is what it's like," or "These are the things it goes well with," or just give you some information to get you started, it can be very helpful.
You know, I had gone to the store, and there were some teenage girls, and they were on the cell phone, I guess it was their mother, I would assume, and she was telling them what to get, and I said, and the girls were saying, I don't see kale, I don't know what that is, and they were yelling in the store, you know how kids are, and I said, it's right here, here it is, and they picked it up, and they said, oh, thank you, and I said, what are you going to do with it, and they're like, we decorate the trays with it, and I said, oh, it's really great in the salad, and they said, no, then we throw it away.
Oh,
you know, if we remember, you know, a long time, well, actually, it still happens. I won't say a long time ago, but they, on catering trays, you know, you always had parsley and you had kale and you had different kinds of lettuces and, you know, some fruits that would always be decorating things, but people would always throw them away and you're going, oh, no, don't do that, right?
Yeah, well, one day, bit by bit, we learn that these are food, not just decorations, and it can be eaten, and that's good.
Yes, it's absolutely funny, though, to see it, you know, because you just say, just try it, just taste it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, I think that your book is a great book because it does have a lot of foods in here that are all throughout all seasons. So, and it may be something that is in your area, and there's some things that may not be in your area. And so really it's a full range, you know, here in the South, you know, tomatoes are a whole lot different than what I remember from Pennsylvania's tomatoes, you know? You know, so I might not eat them down here. I might wait till I got up north or in.
Oh, I've had great tomatoes in New Orleans.
Different ones.
In fact,
when you're used to it.
Well, I mean, they were just delicious. You know, they were a really delicious tomato. I got them at the farmer's market. I took them home with me on the plane. And as I went through the scanner, the woman said, oh, I see you have some of our tomatoes. They're really, really good. Seasons are different. But again, I mean, it depends where you're getting your tomatoes. If you're only going to a supermarket, they're never going to be great. Tomatoes depend on being fresh. They depend on not being stored in a cold, cold unit. They depend on being picked a couple of days at the most out from being eaten. So, you know, I think the real step in teaching people and exposing people to the goodness of all kinds of foods, vegetables and fruits and so forth, is going to a market where you can really experience them.
Yes, I know when I go to Santa Barbara, to Santa Monica, and you go to the farmers markets there, they allow you to, you know, you can smell the food. You're standing there going, oh, I can smell it, you know, when you just walk up there. So you really know that you're getting something really fresh and just really great, and that's very important.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It's the key to the whole thing. You know, eating dead food is just not very tasty, not very exciting.
Well, Deborah, we have gone right through this time. It's been a pleasure to have you with us. Could you please share with the listeners your website and more information about you and your other books? That would be wonderful.
Oh, sure. My website is easy. It's DeborahMadison.com. And all my books, there are 14 of them, are on there. And they're described. And you can order them from there, or you can go to your local bookstore and independent bookstore and find them or order them. The three books that I feel most closely identified with in some ways, one is The Greens Cookbook, because that's the restaurant that I started in San Francisco in 1979. It's a restaurant cookbook, so it tends to be a little bit more complicated, but it is vegetarian and it gives great results. But I loved writing local flavors, cooking and eating from America's farmers markets, and that is another book that introduces people to all kinds of vegetables, and particularly in a regional sense, because I visited 100 farmers markets around the country to write that book. And then I have soups and suppers and seasonal fruit desserts and my book Vegetable Literacy, which came out just before this one that we've been talking about.
Well, you know, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you with us. We will be featuring this book in our book club on our website, and it has been a pleasure. So thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much.
Information about Deborah Madison's book, it is The New Vegetarian Cooking for Everyone. And as we've said, this is not just about being a vegetarian or a vegan. It is just about how to incorporate vegetables and fruits and into your food and into your diet. It's not about opening a can or, you know, a frozen baggie and just throwing it down on the dish with some butter and salt and pepper like so many people have. There are so many different spices in the world. There's so many different types of vegetables and fruits that you can incorporate, and you don't have to buy a big bag of it or a big can of it. You go to a store where you can buy two Brussels sprouts, you know. Hey, I've done that before, you know, or one of those dried peppers or something, as we've said in the show, enough spice where it's just like a little tiny fingerful. You know, you don't have to buy all of this stuff. So just try a little bit of this, that, and the other, but make sure you always take a picture of what you're buying and the name so that when you get home and you're looking it up in the cookbook, you'll say, you know, I thought I knew what that was, but now I got it home and now I don't remember, so hey, I'm going to throw it away. Don't do that. Take a picture what you bought and the name off the shelf or the bulk item, and so you can always remember it and look it up in the cookbook when you get home. So thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you really had a choice of, you know, saying it's time for me to make a few changes in my life, and, you know, it's great to be able to put some vegetables on the table that we might only eat one teaspoon of it today, but boy, it was great, and maybe we'll make it a big pan of it next time. So there's always ways to institute things in small changes. So please do try it out. So thank you so much for joining us. It has been a pleasure, and have a wonderful day.
Today we discuss many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.